Last week, comedian Seth Rogen testified in front of a Senate Appropriations panel in favor of more funding for Alzheimer's research. But how much does it matter when celebrities support causes? A political scientist discusses celebrity political activism, coming up later.
First, should the United States have a mandatory draft, a draft-related song there in the background? After a decade of war in Afghanistan and a long conflict in Iraq, there have been calls in Congress and elsewhere for rethinking how we recruit our military personnel with an eye toward changing the way we make our decisions about when to go to war.
Those who propose a draft or some kind of mandatory service say the civilian population has lost touch with the sacrifice of war and doesn't understand the consequences of military adventurism. They say a draft might make the U.S. less likely to wage new battles.
To help us understand the arguments and history behind the draft is Harper's executive editor James Marcus. His article, Dodge the Draft, appeared in this month's Harper's Magazine. James, welcome to the show.
Great. Thanks for having me.
The last draft in American history during the Vietnam War, to put it mildly, didn't go over very well with a lot of people. Some people are arguing, though, today that a mandatory draft should be reinstated. Why is that?
Well, I think there are several arguments that are connected to this call for a renewed draft. And you mentioned some of them in your introduction. There's a feeling that the country is very divided in terms of there are regional divisions, ethnic divisions, certainly economic divisions. Some of the pro-draft pundits feel like if every American was forced to serve with Americans of every different kind, that might close some of those gaps. Some of the pro-draft pundits feel like we need more veterans in the Congress, that the quality of our legislature would be improved by having more veterans in there. And paradoxically, some of them are proposing it almost as an anti-war measure in the sense that if everybody's children were in the armed forces, they're suggesting we would be much more reluctant to actually send them to war.
We've historically been pretty suspicious of the idea of a draft throughout American history. Can you walk us through how our attitudes toward conscription have evolved since the Founding Fathers?
Yeah, I mean, there was not a draft in the Revolutionary War. There were local militias and there was a volunteer army. And there were times during the war when a very frazzled George Washington would be pleading with the Continental Congress for more troops. But they were not at all willing to institute a national draft then because the country itself was a new and rather fragile entity. The first time there was a draft in American history was during the Civil War. The South actually instituted a draft first because it was short of soldiers and certainly was not about to ask its population of slaves to fight for the continuation of slavery. That was in 1862. Now, in 1863, the Union instituted the first national draft in sort of U.S. history, and that was met with some very violent opposition in different parts of the country. There were violent protests in Boston, Newark, Hartford, and Albany. The worst and the most famous, however, were New York City, which saw just incredibly ferocious draft rioting in 1863.
And part of the anger over that was because you could buy your way out of it, right?
Oh, yes. There was certainly a strong class element to this. According to the Enrollment Act of 1863, you could give the government $300 and avoid being drafted. Now, $300 was an enormous amount of money then. So it was essentially a get-out-of-jail-free card for rich people. And so there was a very powerful element of class resentment in these riots. There was also a nativist and racist elements to it as well. But mobs of up to 10,000 people just rampaged around Manhattan for, I think, 5 straight days. They destroyed draft offices, churches, homes. They pulled down telegraph lines. The only thing that actually put down these riots was the arrival of 6 regiments of federal troops who had just fought at Gettysburg and were probably saying to themselves, oh, my God, you know, we survived that, and now we have to go to New York City.
And then the World Wars, we had conscription, but that was pretty uncontroversial, wasn't it?
The World Wars were different. I think World War I was sold to the public as a struggle for civilization. It was probably the first American war where all the forces of sort of PR were turned upon the civilian population. And that's how people saw it. And so there were, you know, everyone was willing to serve. And obviously World War II was the good war. And once the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, it was a defensive conflict. So in both of those world wars, there wasn't a lot of trouble getting a large enough army to fight. But sort of the ghost of 1863 came back during the Vietnam War.
And what happened there? Obviously, that's a huge amount of history to ask you about, but how did the conscription in the Vietnam War lead to the political protest? And did that make the military a little gun-shy about bringing back a draft?
Yes, it certainly did. I mean, very much unlike World War I and World War II, the Vietnam War was increasingly resented by the American public. Eventually, that sense that we were fighting a war that we should not be fighting sort of bled into the military itself. And so by the late 60s, early 70s, you saw a kind of slow-motion mutiny taking place in the armed forces. Sometimes it was just foot-dragging. Sometimes it was insubordination. But there began to be more and more fragging of superior officers, meaning killing them, making it look like an accident sometimes, a grenade that rolls into a tunnel, and sometimes just shooting them. And there was more of this going on than the Army was willing to admit at the time, and it really spooked the armed forces. So in 1973, when Defense Secretary Melvin Laird said that conscription was over, the armed forces did not protest. They were very much spooked by what happened when you coerce soldiers into fighting a long-term war that many of them did not want to fight.
That takes us up to the present day, and James Marcus of Harper's, stay with us. Earlier today, we spoke with Professor of History and International Relations at Boston University, Andrew Basevich, about the idea of a skin in the game argument that James Marcus touched on earlier, the idea that if people are disconnected from the military, they don't have a stake in what American foreign policy looks like and our decision to intervene militarily looks like. Andrew Basevich served in both the Vietnam and Persian Gulf Wars. He lost a son in Iraq. Here's what he had to say. Well, what is the skin in the game argument for bringing back a draft?
Well, I'm not sure it's an argument for bringing back a draft. It is an argument, however, for trying to re-engage the American people with their military. And the skin in the game argument simply is that when you don't have a stake, when you don't feel the effects, when you don't have to pay, you become less interested in what's going on. And my critique of U.S. military policy over the last couple of decades would be one that the American people have paid insufficient attention to where their soldiers are being sent and how their soldiers are being used, and that this has contributed to defective policies.
So the bulk of us don't have a personal connection when troops are sent to war. It's always, in effect, somebody else or somebody else's kid going.
That's exactly right. I mean, when you think about the fact, I mean, the president has made frequent references to us being a nation at war for well over a decade. And in a country of, 315 million people, the percentage of people who have been directly affected, who have a stake, who care, is quite small. And for someone like myself who thinks that at least the Iraq War was unnecessary and both the Iraq and Afghanistan wars have been mismanaged, as I look for explanations for how our policies have been so wrong-headed, I've reached the conclusion that one of the reasons is that the American people have disengaged from their military.
Would you support a mandatory draft or some kind of even mandatory military service to try to build that bridge to get that connection to a nation at war?
No, my argument is a little bit broader than that, maybe a little bit ambitious, and in that sense, maybe politically impossible, but I think we should consider a program of national service. And let me explain why a national service is not to be mistaken for a draft. National service says that every young person at age, let's say, 18, owes a couple of years of service to country or community, with that service being fulfilled in a variety of ways. There'll be a menu. One item on the menu is to join the Army, the Navy, the Marine Corps, whatever. But other items would be join the Peace Corps, join a new version of the Civilian Conservation Corps, join Teach for America, but that everybody, in fact, would have an obligation to serve as part of becoming a citizen.
On the side of the military, would they want that? Do they want more random people? Maybe it's not compulsory military service, but a lot more people would be in there. Do they want that broader pool, or do they want the volunteers that they're getting now?
No, it's a very good question. We've got an officer corps that is accustomed to relying on long-service professionals. Let's call them professional soldiers. And from the perspective of somebody who's commanding a battalion, let's say, there's a lot of advantages to relying on long-service regulars. But the preferences of the officer corps should not necessarily determine the basic military system of the United States.
Would having something like this in play ultimately make us less likely to go to war?
Well, arguably yes, and I don't think it would guarantee. I don't think a closing the gap between the military and society would somehow guarantee that there would be no unnecessary wars or badly managed wars. I think it would, however, reduce the likelihood. Why? Because the American people, if they had skin in the game, would be somewhat more attentive to what our policies consisted of in substantive terms.
You have had skin in the game serving in Vietnam and the Persian Gulf, your family as well. How did that affect the way you view war and American foreign policy?
Well, I don't know. It's true that I have a personal history in all this, but I think that my position derives more from being a student of history and trying to evaluate in a detached way the course of American foreign policy, particularly since the end of the Cold War, trying to understand why in recent decades the country has shown this preference for using military might, trying to understand why, despite the fact that in so many respects we have a superior military, nonetheless the outcomes of our wars are less than satisfactory. It's a complicated issue. In my judgment, is that at least one component of an answer deals with the military system that we have, that we've come to rely on. I think what we have is a military system that is not democratic. Given the way the maldistribution of sacrifice, I don't think it's moral, and perhaps worst of all, it's not effective. You know, we don't win. We have lots of wars. The wars go on a long time. They don't end successfully. They cost a lot. And it seems to me that any citizen who is paying attention would be saying, there's something wrong here. And we ought to be trying to find out what's wrong and to, therefore, make the necessary corrective action.
Andrew, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
That was Andrew Basevich of Boston University. I talked to him earlier today. Harper's executive editor James Marcus stays with us as we talk about the idea of bringing back a military draft in the United States. We're done in Afghanistan, or we'll be soon done in Iraq, but how will we choose whether or not to go to war in the future?
And we'd like to hear from you on this one. Do you think there should be a universal draft? Do you think it would make Americans less likely to want to go to war and America more invested in foreign policy? Or do you think an all-volunteer force is better, what we have now? Call us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're back now with Harper's executive editor James Marcus, and we're talking about whether or not there should be a draft for the U.S. military. As the United States considers future conflicts, who should be invested in the decisions?
And we'd like to hear from you about the idea of bringing back a draft in the United States. Join in at 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll get to your calls in just a moment. James, just a few minutes ago, we heard Andrew Basevich making the case for universal service of some sort. There have been calls for bringing back a draft. Who is making that call in recent years?
Well, what struck me as I began to look into this issue was that these calls tended to come not from the military. They came from fairly moderate voices like Dana Milbank at the Washington Post or Thomas E. Ricks, who is an historian and a journalist himself. The calls have also come from Representative Charles Rangel of New York City. The military itself does not seem to want a renewed draft. The officers I spoke to in the course of reporting this piece said that as long as the geopolitical situation remains stable meaning the way it is now, and we're not fighting a sort of massive existential conflict for our survival, they feel that the AVF is better for them. And, you know, I found it very interesting that the military itself was not calling for this resumed draft. It was people outside of the military.
We'll go to our callers now. We've got Ben on the line in Madison. Ben, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to call because I ended up joining in 2001 for the Montgomery GI Bill, and I joined because it was my own choice. And I feel as though if a draft was instated, a lot of people that would be pulled into it would be really wanting out, and it would cause a lot of friction in the military culture. Because a lot of people that join, when they join for whatever benefit they're joining, either to provide for their family or to get the college money, they're wanting, even then, they're kind of wanting out. They're kind of always second-guessing themselves, so it's really hard to stay focused and to have that motivation. But then if it was the other route where the senator was saying where you could join based on your preference, so you'd either join, say, the Peace Corps or something locally in your state where you're helping the community, but you had to join something, then you'd get people that would be able to, one, psychologically prepare themselves so they know, hey, I can either join the military and I'll get these benefits, or I can join this, and then it would just, it'd be a softer way to get people and to provide both sides of the benefits.
All right. Thanks for the call, Ben. And that's part of the military's worry, isn't it, they want people who want to be there, James?
They very much want people who want to be there. When I got a communication from a DOD spokesman about this, a big part of it was, we want troops who have not been coerced into joining. I would just add that Andrew Basevich, who is a contributor to Harper's Magazine and a board member here, and who I spoke to in my own article, is someone I respect a great deal, and I'm not really on the opposite side from him in many senses, not the least in that I think there are some excellent arguments to be made for some kind of universal national service. What I find a little confusing and maybe counterproductive is I feel if you want a domestic peace corps, then propose that on its own terms and don't bolt it together with a draft, which is also Representative Charles Rangel has proposed five times since 2003 something called the Universal National Service Act. And again, that is kind of a two-pronged thing where you either can volunteer for military service or civilian service where you might be teaching or, you know, building infrastructure, helping the community. And I think that that's a great idea. It's certainly many strong arguments for it, but I feel like the two things should be kept separate. And if you want to propose a draft, then you should propose that on its own terms as well.
Thanks for the call, Ben. We've got Cindy with us now in Prairie du Chien. Cindy, hi.
Hi. My comment is almost the same as Ben's. I am a proud parent of two Army soldiers, and I do not believe there should be a draft because if those soldiers do not want to be there, you do not know if they're going to go in and do the job that they were recruited to do.
All right. Thanks for that call, Cindy. And we'll go straight to another caller, Mac in Milwaukee. Mac, hi. What do you think about this?
Well, I believe that there should be one because the people are losing their backbone, right? Personal opinion. That it teaches discipline. It teaches people how to understand what to understand. Yes, they might not like it, but it may be that they don't like it now, but they grow into it, and that way America isn't a spineless backbone anymore.
Thanks for the call, Mac. Thanks to both of you for those calls. And James, that's another thread in arguments in favor of a draft, the idea that Americans are soft, we lack discipline, and this putting everybody at risk or in the military would change that.
There are all sorts of arguments about the social fabric of the nation being weak or being, you know, torn up in all sorts of ways. I guess I would like to find a way to build our national character without putting, you know, 2 million young Americans into uniform. I don't think that's the only way to do it. I recognize the underlying problem, but I guess I'm not persuaded that a universal draft is the solution to that problem.
When this gets talked about, I mean, some of the people proposing the idea of a draft are wanting it to affect American foreign policy. The military being opposed to this is don't change our effectiveness for political reasons. Is that the main back and forth on this?
Well, I mean, that's part of the back and forth. The other factor that has not yet come up in this conversation is that Well, there are two things. I mean, we are in an era when we can fight most of the wars we fight with a smaller force that is much more technologically adept than older armies were. We don't tend to fight wars now where you need a million troops in the battlefield, you know. The other thing is that we are in a somewhat more austere period, fiscally speaking. And indeed, you know, just in the last week or so, Defense Secretary Hagel unveiled a new military budget for 2015 and looking down the road. And in fact, he is proposing to shrink the Army's size down to 440,000 troops by 2019, which is the smallest standing army we would have had since 1940, since before World War II. So there are also economic factors going on here, and there are just the changing nature of warfare itself. And I think that's also part of the reason why the military itself remains more comfortable with a smaller force. They are recognizing some of these financial restrictions, and they also are recognizing a different force is called for in a different age of warfare.
James, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Sure. Happy to be here.
We've been speaking with James Marcus, executive editor at Harper's, about the concept of bringing back a military draft. His article in this month's Harper's Magazine is called Dodge the Draft.